look back at the year 2017. Hoosiers in Washington, Holcomb in the governor's mansion. That, plus a Senate race gets underway, alcohol at the State House, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending December 29th, 2017.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, we look back at the Hoosier political landscape in 2017. The year began as former Governor Mike Pence headed to Washington to become vice president. He was joined by others in the Trump administration, including former Senator Dan Coats, healthcare advisor Seema Verma, and former health commissioner Jerome Adams. The year has been tumultuous for the White House through President Donald Trump's highs and lows. Did 2017 go the way Mike Pence hoped it would? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and political analyst John Katzenberger. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, has this year met Mike Pence's expectations?
Well, I think he's the sycophant in chief. I think it's been a little bit more difficult for him than he thought. I think a lot of people who supported Trump in the election, and of course that was not a majority of the country, but a lot of people who supported him thought that what you saw on the campaign trail wasn't what you're going to get in governing. And now they found out that what they're getting in governing is worse than anything they saw on the campaign trail. I mean, for example, he's had to duck on the Roy Moore controversy. He's had to duck on a lot of the sexual harassment stuff because his president is as guilty of sexual harassment as anybody who's been ousted in this latest purge. So there are things I think he would prefer not to have had happen. On the other hand, he certainly is there as a result of luck. He was going to lose the governor's race, and instead he winds up as vice president of the United States. So it's certainly more than a little boy from Columbus could ever hope for.
You just alienated a whole lot of people, including an entire city. So that's
right.
Just keep going.
If you're Mike Pence, when you got into the race with Donald Trump and certainly went through some of the things in the campaign in 2016 with Donald Trump, as we've learned in various stories that have come out this year, did you kind of know what you were getting into? Did 2017 basically go the way you thought it might?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. I think he transitioned out of his role in the campaign, which was to be a great supporter of what candidate Trump's messaging was, and has created a real profile for himself in Washington D.C. as one of the guys that's sent in to try to make these deals on these big pieces of legislation. Not a lot of that has worked out. The tax bill is really the hallmark legislative achievement of the year.
Legislative achievement.
But it's not the only achievement, period. I mean, from a regulatory standpoint, there's a regulatory side of this and how the administration has operated absent Congress where the sideshow isn't, right? Where Seema Verma is working, where Alex Azar is working, Jerome Adams, these other Hoosiers that are working inside the federal government and rolling back a lot of regulations. The real metric
clean
is
air,
they wanted to repeal 2-1, and now they're repealing 20-1. And so they're really but back to Mike Pence's point, I think it should be exactly what he thought he was signing up for, because there was no secret how the role he was going to play, and it was a heightened role, and he's a pretty influential vice president if you take it in the context of history.
All things considered, do you think Mike Pence has had a successful year as vice president?
It's been a bad year for the administration, but for the reasons that Mike suggested, it's all in the framing and what your measuring sticks are. But for Mike Pence, when you think he might have been out, potentially could have been without office, now it's not a bad consolation prize to be vice president. And keep in mind that two things. A, because of the lack of traditional...
We should just put that on. He did not actually lose the game.
Because of the...
But he was going to.
The traditional...
I don't know about that. John Gregg wasn't
the traditional lack of traditional expertise in government and Washington that Donald Trump brought, it elevated Mike Pence's role, and that's why you see so many Hoosiers in the positions. Yeah. So that made him...
there's no bench for
made
Trump.
Him more powerful than the typical vice president
so
and more of a go-to
around.
Guy. And then the other thing I would just say, why I'd say it's relatively good for him, not the administration, but for him, when you look at all the scandals and were alleged scandals and this dysfunction.
All right, he's not a lunatic, okay? Well, that's what you're saying.
Talk about damning.
He's not a lunatic.
He has not been.
He doesn't grab women. So that's a piece of
He's been
plus.
At the periphery of those or outside
so it's been a great
that.
Year,
so I guess.
It's been a great year, yeah. He's been a great year.
Okay, so if he
he's
has.
Not as bad as Donald
Mike Pence. Mike Pence hasn't been in the midst of all these scandals or alleged scandals that John just alluded to. Is that good enough that over the course of a year, if you've just been not at the center of that negative spotlight, does that work for you if you're
Mike
Pence?
That's a very low bar. And, you know, you have to also put it in the context, the Washington Post's analysis after the last cabinet meeting when they passed the budget showed that for every 12 seconds, the president made a what could be interpreted as a sycophantic statement about the president every 12 or so seconds for 3 minutes. And I think that's a real problem for him. He has a tendency to do that. It diminishes his role. It diminishes his persona. And I think he should be aware of that because for the reasons that everyone else has mentioned here, he has an opportunity to be much more influential and for him to, in my estimation, squander it by making statements which are rather hard to square with reality when it comes to the abilities of the president. He should be aware of that.
Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, was 2017 a good year for Vice President Mike Pence? A, yes, or B, no, or C, a mixed bag. If you would like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, Governor Eric Holcomb's first year in office was mostly well-reviewed by members of both parties. He started off the year with a bang, delivering disaster relief for East Chicago and pardoning Keith Cooper. His approval numbers have been well above 50%, and he's only recently run into some trouble, as we've talked about in recent shows, at the Department of Child Services. Mike O'Brien, has 2017 been good to Eric Holcomb?
It's been a great year for him. He came off of a 100-day gubernatorial campaign. His name ID was closer to zero than it was to 100%. You know, and he knew that. To his credit, he went out and hit all corners of the state. And people in Democrat areas or Republican areas all over the state are used to seeing him. He's on the road almost every day. And for that, I mean, we talked last week how Democrats are kind of borrowing some of the administration's messaging. We know that when he goes to Gary or East Chicago, for example, the legislators are there, local officials are praised him and are happy to see him. I think he's going to be, by the end of this, he'll be viewed as a kind of a governor for all people.
Has Governor Holcomb had a good year?
I think relatively good. He was completely unknown. He's the accidental governor. And I don't know him very well. He seems like a nice enough guy. He certainly avoided some of the pitfalls that Mike Pence jumped into with the discrimination against gays and that type of thing. So from that point, it's good. Unfortunately, with the DCS, he's showing what his background is, and he's been a staffer all his life, is what he's been doing. And his ability to lead just doesn't seem to be there. I mean, we have an opioid crisis, and one of his suggestions is that we have better coordination among the coroners so we get better death statistics. That's our response to an opioid crisis that's killing people and ruining families. I mean, he has to step up to the plate and show some leadership if he's going to be elected in his own right as opposed to on the Trump wave, because the wave coming back the next time he stands for election is not going to be pro-Trump.
So I heard a very good year, obviously, from Mike O'Brien, a pretty good year from Ann Delaney.
A decent year.
Going forward now, what do we need to see from Eric Holcomb so that at the end of 2018 those answers aren't too different?
Well, I think how he deals with the DCS situation I think will go a long way to determining his effectiveness as a leader. I do think he's got a lot of good things going for him. He does have a lot of goodwill. He earned that goodwill. And I think one of the things that he's got going for him, besides the fact that he's working very hard and being visible, is that he seems to like the job. And that is a trait that we too often don't see from people who are in public office. So often we see people treated as if it's, we should serve them rather than the other way around. And this governor seems to have an enthusiasm for the job, a desire to do a good job. And I think that if he can carry that forward, he does well with DCS or whatever else pops up in the coming year. A year from now, we'll be saying that he had a good year.
There's been some question about, Governor Holcomb hasn't really put out any big ideas, both in his 2017 agenda and a little bit in his 2018 agenda.
I think that coroner coordination is really important.
But is that somewhat a symptom of the fact that he's now following up on more than a decade of Republican leadership at almost every level of government? And so the big ideas are in the rearview mirror at this point. Is he doing what needs to be done?
Oh, my God. You're telling me that there are no problems in Indiana that need to be addressed?
And he wouldn't agree with that either, Ann. He would
good.
Agree with you.
We need leadership.
It seems to me that I'll say it was a pretty good year for him, certainly a good 11 months, maybe a bad last month, but a good 11 months. But the thing that got him, I think, in the good graces of Hoosiers and resulted in our being able to say he had a good year is what is potentially going to bite him the biggest and most painful way now. And that is, I think what Indiana wanted and needed after the kind of vitriol-filled, rancorous, hyper-partisan election that we saw was somebody who said, I'm not going to throw out red meat. I'm not just going to tack to, satisfy one wing of the party. Yes, the agenda has been fairly conservative, but it's been more on government management and making Indiana government work right, not the hotly contested social issues. So that's worked. But the problem with that is you got to deliver on being the effective manager who can make the trains run on time. And if the child welfare issue, if he doesn't get it addressed, and as we've talked about in a recent show, there's a real risk here because every time a child child dies, but any time child ill befalls a child, those questions will arise. And if there's not a good explanation that the state has responded properly, what was his best attribute could be his undoing, I think.
Quickly, Mike O'Brien, what do you want to see from Merrick Holcomb in the next year?
One, coming into this year, he kind of inherited an agenda that was already in progress, right? This was the year to deliver on infrastructure, for example. But he's reloaded the agenda and refocused the legislature and the administration, first and foremost, on workforce, of which the opiate crisis is a part, right? That's a standalone issue that we're doing more than coroner coordination, Ann, but way to pick the smallest, most offensive, lowest common denominator issue to promote,
also,
like it's the whole program.
You're coordinating
well
the rest too. You're coordinating yourself out of the problem.
So he's reloaded that agenda on things that I think all Hoosiers would agree are problems that we need to address and understand our problem.
Well, the 2018 Senate race is already in full swing here in 2017 as multiple Republicans jockey for the right to challenge incumbent Democrat Joe Donnelly next fall. And what's likely to be the most expensive political race in Hoosier history. The GOP primary so far has been marked by rancor, principally between Congressman Luke Messer and Todd Rokita. John Schwanis, will 2017 in this Senate race be remembered as the ramp-up to even more divisiveness, or was it just early fighting that settles more into normalcy in 2018?
I've given up any hope for normalcy. In any political arena, anywhere, it seems that we have not gotten it out of our system yet as a society. And I do think there's a cyclical nature here, or a pendulum, use whatever analogy or metaphor you want. And I'm not sure we're entirely there yet. But if certainly the primary, as you suggested in your introduction here, is any indication, I don't think it's going to be all kumbaya, if only because the scars and wounds that have been inflicted on the Republican side, yeah, they do have a common enemy, and Joe Donnelly, but when you look at how vicious, atypically vicious, this is the stuff that Ronald Reagan would just be spinning. Maybe he is spinning. I don't know. I haven't checked in on him lately. But this is Richter scale,
if he was.
Yeah.
Is this only going to get worse?
Yes, unfortunately. As John said, the vitriol that we've seen, it will only heighten through the course, assuming everyone stays in the race, and I don't see any indication of anybody dropping out. So you're going to spend millions of dollars through May tearing each other down on the Republican side and also trying to tear down the senator and the institution. And then once that happens, the smoke clears for a day or two, and then you have the Republicans and the Democrats. And, oh, by the way, all of these five, outside groups,
yeah.
Super PACs who don't really have to identify with anybody but an issue, and so they'll come in and lob their bombs in the race. And by the time it's all over, it'll be scorched earth. The losers will be whomever comes up in the short end, but also the person who wins, because then they have to go and serve in an institution that has been, again, further decimated by the ill will of the people who are ostensibly looking to serve in it. And Hoosiers, who will be so turned off by the process because of all the negativity they see, that will probably have another low turnout. And it's just disgusting.
As I said, the 2017 GOP primary certainly has been marked by rancor going towards Joe Donnelly. Joe Donnelly is not a candidate typically who is engaged in a lot of that. But is he going to have to, at least in part, because he's going to be getting so much from the other side?
Well, I think obviously, at Politics 101 will tell you you have to defend yourself. That doesn't necessarily mean you have to attack in the same manner that they've been doing in the vicious ad hominem attacks you see Republicans launching against each other. That's not the kind of campaign that Joe Donnelly runs. So I think that the kind of campaign that he runs will appeal to Hoosiers, and it will be in sharp contrast to what we're going to see between now and May, and then going forward, whichever of the three dwarfs is successful in that, in challenging him, you're going to see the same kind of thing launched. And I think you're right, that'll turn voters off, but that'll work in Joe Donnelly's favor.
Is this going the way Republicans would like it to go, or do things need to get better if they want to have an even better shot to beat Joe Donnelly in 2018?
No, I think it's a little more overheated than your average, county party organization would like it to be. We don't like it when these guys, fight amongst themselves either. So, but I don't know. I really don't. To your point, John, whether or not this has any sustainability, the political cycle and the memories of voters in an election environment is so short now. You go back to, Richard Murdoch was going to win. That was a vicious primary between the Lugar and conservative wings of the party. And absent Richard Murdoch having to overstate how pro-life he was at the end of that campaign in that last debate, he's a U.S. senator. He's the one defending himself. So no self-inflicted wounds that severe in the general election. I think even the viciousness of how hard fought this GOP primary is going to be, whoever comes out of it, I don't think will have lasting damage unless they inflict it on themselves.
Well, I think they're inflicting it on themselves because they're wrapping themselves in Donald Trump.
And we don't know where that's going to be here in a year.
Oh, I think we do know where that's going to be. And that's
going to
be the albatross. You hope you don't know.
I'm glad you're so sure.
You hope you don't know where you're going to be. And they're going to be up against a very popular senator who works very hard, and they're going to be Donald Trump Jr. And that's not going to be.
Donnelly's problem. We talked about it last
week. It's not
going
to be in their advantage.
He's already running ads, and he's got to shore up his. He's got to shore up his Marion County Democrat base right now.
That's not what he's doing.
Don't forget, he could also take the Mike Pence strategy in past campaigns, where you take the high road, but you have surrogates. And I'm sure there are any number of surrogates. Who would be willing to do the dirty work is what I'm saying. You can try to have your cake and eat it too.
Sharp, but he felt guilty about it.
While the 2017 legislative session centered mainly around a landmark road funding bill, a surprise foray into alcohol laws garnered plenty of attention towards the end of session and through the rest of the year. John Katzenberger, was 2017 the turning point for the seemingly endless alcohol debate in Indiana?
Well, I think it was a turning point in the sense that there has been a renewed focus on the issue by the General Assembly. You've got chairs of the public policy committees talking about it. You had the summer study committee. But it won't be the turning point unless some legislation making a big change emanates from the legislature this year. And given that it's a short session and given that it looks like they want to drive this session pretty hard, I'm not sure that's going to happen.
Was 2017 the turning point?
When you have this much market share at stake and therefore money at stake, no. And as John suggests, if there were one behemoth bill, that would settle every issue, but that's not what we're seeing.
Right.
We're seeing some elements of this resolve, such as Sunday sales, but not cold beer, and there's enough there that this will create a buzz, so to speak, for, I think, plenty of sessions to come. That's as good as you get during the holiday season. I'm sorry.
Was 2017 a turning point for alcohol issues? I mean, there have been plenty of sessions where, okay, they studied it, and now we're really going to do something, and nothing happened. But is this the one where something will actually happen?
Well, yes, I think so. I think there's enough disagreement among the right people that that a clean Sunday sales bill is going to be introduced and move through the process, and there's some agreement on that. You can't predict how this goes through the end because there's interest pushing against it. But, you know, I think in the General Assembly, they go through kind of seasons of the types of issues they're going to deal with. So the last 3 years we dealt with, what do you do with Tesla and auto dealers, you know, and we spent 3 years trying to figure that out. So they're driven, and those policy debates are driven by changes in the marketplace. You know, and this one was driven by a change in interpretation on what a convenience store can sell,
right,
you know, and what they're able to do. So, you know, the big fights tend to be, how are we going to get this stuff to the consumer? I think ultimately that's the big fight, because the world's just changing in every other in a lot of different ways.
See, I don't think the big fight is how you get it to the consumer. I think the big fight is who makes money on how the beer or wine or whatever else gets to the consumer. And this issue isn't over. I mean, it's going to come back in any number of iterations later on, because it's all about who benefits from it, which is why, as a state, we ought to say you can't drink until you're 21 and get the out of the business of regulating it otherwise.
You and the Chamber of Commerce just locking arms again.
I think it's ironic that the Republican Party is the one doing all the regulating here.
I've been told it's a very dangerous substance. I wouldn't know. As you look back at 2017, who is your biggest winner in the Hoosier political scene? We'll start with you, Anne Delaney.
It's obviously Mike Pence. He got sworn in as vice president after preparing to watch his successor get sworn in as governor. It's obviously a big win for him.
Who's your biggest winner for 2017's political scene?
It's got to be Eric Holcomb, right? He became lieutenant governor in early 2016. Through that transition, was in a competitive fight for, once Mike Pence was nominated to run for vice president, became the gubernatorial nominee, ran a 100-day campaign, and one big, and he's ending the year on a high note.
Who do you like for 2017?
I didn't think Anne was going to say that, but I agree. I would agree with her. I think you can't define it as anybody other than Mike Pence. When you consider that after the RFRA debate, the restoration of religious freedom, everybody was writing his political obituary. I mean, not just would he ever be able to run for national office, but would he hold on in Indiana? So to go from that to vice president, as I said before, any bad consolation prize, and I think that does qualify as
again,
the winner.
Again, he didn't lose the governor's
race. Right.
Only because he wasn't on the ballot.
John Ketzemer, who's your biggest winner?
I have to agree. It is obviously Mike Pence. I think Eric Holcomb had an excellent year, but I can't choose otherwise.
All right. And now, who's your biggest loser of 2017? I'll start with you, Mike O'Brien.
Not because they're losers, but they're losing quite a bit, and that's the Indiana General Assembly. They've lost the two fiscal pillars of the Senate to retirement, within 3 months of each other. There's another dozen legislators who have announced that they've either left or they're announcing they're going to leave at the end of 2018. So that's a lot of new blood. It creates a lot of opportunity for some of the younger guys, some of the big classes of legislators that came in particularly 2010 and 2012. But it's a lot of institutional memory out the door, and that can cause, back to the alcohol issue, one of the reasons we're having a big alcohol fight is because no one remembers the last time we had one, which was 20 or 30 years ago.
Yeah, no question.
Anne Delaney, who's your loser of 2017?
2017, I don't know yet. I would have said for 2018, whoever wins the Republican primary to run against Joe Donnelly, but maybe backing that up, it's whoever loses it because they're going to give up a safe congressional seat and retire from politics.
That breaks your heart, Anne, I can tell.
Really,
who's your biggest loser of 2017?
I think the biggest loser is the democratic process. I mean, the shenanigans we've seen in Congress and the electoral cycles is the way they've been, as we discussed earlier, certainly as I ranted earlier. I really am concerned for our ability to govern ourselves in a way that's meaningful if this continues to occur.
Biggest loser of 2017, John Schwanz.
I really like the answers these guys gave because they sound really profound. And you're right. And
don't it's not yours.
And it's
we
not just losing.
Come on, John. Just
all right.
Just
but we're also losing lawyers. And I may be the only person who thinks the General Assembly needs lawyers, but we are losing too.
Somebody.
I'd say anybody who supported Roy Moore, like what was the Indiana First? They're probably
Indiana
not.
First.
They're maybe not
about
first
Todd
now.
Rokita.
They may be. Well,
all right. Well, finally, as we approach 2018, what do you think Indiana's New Year's resolution should be, John Ketzenberger?
I think Indiana should resolve to better government and more opportunity, and to ensure that all Hoosiers have equal access to that opportunity.
Quickly, John Schwanis.
Since I liked their answer before, I'm going to restore democracy, civility, and compromise as a buzzword.
Mike O'Brien?
I think don't get distracted. We're running a different show here than some of the sideshows in D.C., and I think if the state of Indiana can stay focused on the path we're on, we're going to be fine.
And quickly, Indelini?
That every Hoosier get out and vote.
There you go.
And let them know just how dissatisfied they are with Donald Trump.
All right, well, that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and political analyst John Ketzenberger. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time and next year, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.